Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kill, your host. We're having discussions with our panel for this Friday. One of the new things we do here on Fridays is just bring in a panel of just fun people to talk to, wonderful people to talk to, and we talk about things that are important. At least we try to. And today I am joined in studio by Chris Check, our president of Catholic Answers, and Todd Agliolaro, the director of Catholic Answers Press. Hello, welcome back to both of you. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me. And Cy, I just want to say I've been saying we should get Todd on this show for a long time.
And but you always say it like this: we should get Todd on the show, and then you wink really big, like. So I never know if you're serious. You're like, hey, you know who'd be good on the show? Todd Agliolaro. And then I get the big wink, and that's not really true, Todd.
Well, when the money was finally there, then I agreed to do it. So you got
I'm glad the budget is so full that we could pay Todd's fee to get him here for 2 hours.
Which I will say this: when I need a good 15 or 30 minutes of lively conversation, I walk to the other end of the building and plop down in the chair opposite Todd's desk.
Yeah?
Todd can provide that. Start to unspool.
That doesn't happen when you come to my office, though.
You don't have a bar.
He doesn't even try to have an intellectual discussion. He's like, behave yourselves.
There's
the chaplain
no
just walked in.
Your office,
the chaplain is here. Behave yourselves.
Yeah.
Father Hugh Barber, not near a microphone, so we can't say hello to him on the air, but he's come to see.
Yeah, because he would just monopolize the conversation.
Oh, he's unbearable, that man. he gave me the look. This hour, I do want to get into some positive things with you and ask you about signs. I personally do feel that there are signs, there are green shoots, and some even things more advanced than green shoots in the life of the church that suggest some wonderful possibilities for the future. And I say that in the midst of what appears to be a renewal of crisis here in the church in the United States, a renewal of that old crisis, in part occasioned by the accusations against Cardinal McCarrick and the resignation of Cardinal McCarrick from his – which I don't quite understand myself. I guess he's not a cardinal anymore. Is that
– No, he is not. That's correct.
So – but he's – he wasn't in active ministry at the time anyway.
No, and he is awaiting canonical trial.
Okay. And then do you have any idea you have a canonical trial and then the possibilities are including being defrocked?
That could be.
Yeah,
yep.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, laicized.
Is that
even
a possibility?
Even laicized. Yep.
Okay, so we don't know about the outcome of that, but certainly that's very painful given the important role that Cardinal McCarrick has played in the American church. And then the allegations – you hear sometimes people say everybody knew. Well, that cannot be the case that everybody knew, but we certainly end up then suspecting one another who did know and who took action and who didn't. And now renewed again this week with something I have to be honest with you. I have been I have avoided reading about. I know it's there in the background. I don't feel emotionally ready to read about it. I haven't read the news stories. I've seen the headlines about all that's gone on with the release of files in Pennsylvania. So here we are again. I'll give you a chance if you want, Chris. You're the boss here at Catholic Answers. Let me ask you this. As the guy who runs Catholic Answers, are people reaching out to this apostolate and saying, what is going on? Are we getting those questions? And what is the answer to those?
Well, things? We sure are, Cy, and you are actually probably better equipped to speak to the volume of these questions than I am, because they're probably coming in on the show. I know Tim fielded one
the other day. He did
a couple 3 days ago on the show. Cy, I approach this question, yes, as the president of an apostolate that is grafted to the vine in good standing with the Catholic Church. And I ask myself, what is the role of Catholic Answers now in a response to all that has come to light in the past 6 months? But before I respond to it as the president of Catholic Answers, I respond to it as I'm sure Todd would. I'm the father of four boys. Jackie and I did not have daughters. She says that was intentional on my part, but
I don't think that's how it works.
No,
I am fairly certain that is not how that works. But
nonetheless, and thanks be to God, my sons were never victims of the horrible sins committed against so many, let's be frank, teenage boys by homosexual predators who were members of the clergy and, in some cases, it seems, the episcopacy. So I approach the question with the anger that I think our Lord had when he was cleansing the temple. I hope that my anger does not become sinful. But that's the first posture that I have in looking at this question, or question, this crisis. And then how do I want the people who listen to Catholic Answers Live, who go to Catholic.com, who buy the books that Todd's Press is putting out, our constituents, if you will, that sounds sort of business-like, our flock sounds a little presumptive. What do I want to tell them, right? Well, I want to tell them, don't leave the Catholic Church. This is where the fullness of the truth is, independent of the behaviors of the men to whose care it has been entrusted. But then I also want to say to them, look, all of this conversation about a therapeutic solution, or if we just send this priest to 6 months at St. Luke's in Maryland or whatever the name of that place is, then we can reintroduce him and all will be well. Well, we know that isn't true.
Right.
And we know two things, Cy. I would refer our listeners to an excellent piece by our friend Dan Mattson, who has been on the show here, a good friend of my brother's, and did a lot of work with him and Courage. It's on the First Things website today. And it says, the title of it, Todd, help me here, is something like, Why Someone Like Me Should Not Be a Priest.
I think that's exactly what it is.
And Dan is a man who has suffered, I don't know how far going back. He has that excellent book from Ignatius Press,
Why
I Don't Call Myself Gay. I recommend it. Cardinal Sarah wrote the introduction. I recommend it to all of our listeners. Please read this book and read Dan's piece on the First Things website today. But the church has known and made explicit as recently as 2005 that men who suffer from this affliction, right, are not fit for the priesthood. They're not. And that was ignored, as we are learning now. And I mean, I guess we're surprised by the magnitude of it, but maybe we're not. I don't know. But that, I'm sorry, I'm getting on the horse here. There's a lot of talk about how we need, you know, a commission or a study or something like that. The church has the things in place. She has the things in place right now. And there are men who have been admitted two holy orders who should not have been. And one of the things, and then I'll shut up for a little bit. One of the things that Mattson makes very clear in that piece, he says, particularly this kind of sexual temptation is very difficult to overcome. It's very difficult to overcome.
Yeah.
And so someone may be off of this behavior for a certain amount of time, a few years or something like that, but then the temptation comes back. And
but isn't that, I mean, in many ways, that's the same story we hear from the man who is addicted to pornography, for example. That the struggle doesn't just, in most cases, just disappear evaporate.
There's
a cyclical kind of returning nature
or
to
alcohol
the problem.
Sigh perhaps yeah. but Mattson, who suffers from this
yeah.
and speaks with authority because it has been his life, says and cites the studies. Go to the First Things article, Daniel Mattson.
Yeah, and he's very helpful too because he's a grown-up. I mean, he's just when you know
absolute prince.
Him,
I love
you
him.
Think he's a grown-up person who has he's not grinding any axes. He's just trying to tell the truth. I gotta go to a break pretty soon. But did you have anything you wanted to add, or did Chris deal with that sufficiently?
Chris had good things to say. I'd counterpoint, or I would build on to his last point about so we want to be careful not to put too much faith in that therapeutic solution. And if you read that Pennsylvania report, you'll find a similar pattern being played out time and time again, where a bishop gets a report of what a priest did and sends him off to St. Luke's or sends him to some kind of psychiatric evaluation. And he comes back in a couple of months, gets a clean bill. Well, you're not really a predator, or you've been cured of that, or
right.
And then relocated. So I think we learned this in 2002, and we should have that it was an excess of trust, perhaps a willful hope in the efficacy of some of these solutions.
Sigh very quickly. Yeah. The therapeutic solution distracts from what really is at work here, and that is moral failure and the action of the devil, who is a real person, and his demons.
Yeah.
That's what's at stake here, or that's what's underway here, I should say. And when Catholics want to engage people in conversation, Todd put up a good list on the website of ways to talk to people who are shaken by this thing.
Oh, I meant to ask you about that.
From our apologists. It's on Catholic.com right now. And my limited contribution to it is this. Don't hesitate to identify the devil and his demons at the center of this work. That's what's underway.
Yeah. And I think we should point out as well that the person who is this, as you say, predator, is fractured or committed to evil in such a way that they are very, very good liars. I think that's something that the depth of the lying that accompanies this kind of predation is extraordinary.
It's studied.
And so I think a lot of people maybe need to reflect on that a little bit before they judge too harshly the person who missed it, the person who – I'm not talking about the person who got the information and excused it. But there's lots of people who had a pastor and say, but I loved that man. He's a – how can he have been a predator? Look,
he's great at a party.
This is something where this person has developed a kind of lying that a normal person is not prepared for.
Sure.
And if you're going to be a predator, you're going to be a very, very practiced and well-developed liar.
And Cy, I'll just say this, and because Father Hugh says this all the time here, it's one of the great gifts of having him here. None of these people who have done these wicked things are beyond the mercy of Jesus Christ.
Nor are any of us.
Right.
I'm glad that you reminded us of that. If you want to talk with your kids about moral issues, and the world gets more and more morally confused, you have a book coming out from the press. From what's that guy's name? Trent Horn and Layla Miller. And I was so impressed. I saw on this very, official-looking letterhead these very kind words from Cardinal Sarah. I say Sarah. I know some people say Sarah.
I think it is Sarah.
But that's extraordinary what he had to say about it.
We were thrilled to get his endorsement.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a new thing for Trent, so we're going to see what what he does with a book. Of course, that's a joke because
writing
books.
I seriously thought that you meant it's a new thing for Trent to be accepted by a bishop that somebody say something nice about him. No, but Trent, we know, is a very fine author and prolific. And
he's co-authored this with Layla Miller.
Yeah.
Tell us about Layla.
In fact, in whose voice the book is written. So she's kind of the narrator. Layla is she's a warrior. She's a warrior for married couples. Her prior book, Primal Loss, tells the often untold story of the traumas and harms that are done to children in divorce that adults rationalize away in their desire to get what they want. I mean, how many times have we heard that's the reason for the divorce, is to make sure the kids aren't in a home where there's argument going on or something like that. But Layla is she's a tough and smart and holy lady, and in their book Made This Way, which is a reference to an approach to helping kids understand tough moral issues, and most of those are sexual, so things like immodesty, homosexuality, but also divorce is in there, and even some things like reproductive technologies and abortion. So there's some of that in there. But the key to their method for helping kids understand these things is to help your kids understand God made you a certain way, and in order to be the way that you are and thus be a happy person and a moral person, you need to live out that way that God made you. And each of these vices and evils that we want our kids to understand in age-appropriate ways, right? We don't want to dash their innocence when they're an elementary school kid. So it's all very age-appropriate, young kids and old kids. But to see all of those moral issues not through a religious positivist or a biblical positivist lens, but through kind of a baby natural law lens. But I didn't
baby
mean
natural
to
natural law. I like that.
Yeah, I can trademark that one. Thanks.
Yeah, baby natural law. So, but you can't get the book yet, though. So why are we talking about it? You can.
Well, you brought it up.
Sorry, I guess you can pre-order it.
When's it
it's
out?
It's in pre-order. It'll be here in about 3 to 4 weeks.
We'll have it at the conference
at a discount price, and it will have copies at the conference.
So come to the conference and buy the book
by Cardinal Burke, who we hope will sign it for you while you're there too. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, cool. All right. So you can go to...
Cardinal Burke forward is on the book on contraception.
Oh, I'm right. I'm thinking about Inseparable.
Yes.
My goodness.
Fine book.
Can we that and go back, or is that already been broadcast?
No, live radio.
No,
man.
But all the description that you gave of the book, that was, in fact, Made
That
This
was
Way.
Accurate, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You can get Made This Way by pre-ordering, or you can pre-order Made This Way by going to shop.catholic.com. Go to shop.catholic.com, get in, and also get Inseparable, the great book that Todd put together on Humani Vitae. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop Robert Barron, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catherine Zeltner.
There are so many misconceptions when it comes to abortion and assisted suicide. It's really confusing, and I think for a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about these things. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, we help to change that. We help to really untangle these web of lies. Listeners can expect to become informed and then grow more confident so that they can then discuss and dialogue these issues, and together we can really impact culture in that way.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Well, we are all familiar with the scandal. We didn't want to avoid it or avoid talking about it, but we're here to talk mostly now for the rest of this hour about the green shoots of hope coming up. One of them, our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, stepped into the studio and gave us a little bit of a correction. He said that bishops are not – if a priest today – if it's established that he has engaged in any improper behavior with children, the
with
priest
with minors,
with minors, right, right, is being laicized. They're not being sent to treatment anymore.
Right,
they're
right. So the reference to St. Luke's comes from things that happened in the past.
It happened in the past, but it's,
yeah,
it, right,
that are reported in the Pennsylvania brief.
Right.
Yeah,
it's awful nice to have Father Hugh around.
Well, yeah. Tim was on the show a couple of 3 days ago, and he did make the point that since the Dallas Charter, which I think is sort of a problematic thing, but obviously some good has come, right? That the church is I won't say she's doing what she can, but
she's doing better.
Something's being done.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. And human nature is not going to change. There are going to continue to be these cases. What needs to happen is that they are properly dealt with immediately when it's established that they've happened. And certainly also, as you said, seminary preparation has to be such that, and who's accepted and not accepted into seminaries has to be such that we're avoiding. And
priestly formation is at the bottom of this.
Yep. Okay, so it's green shoots, signs of renewal. I'm going to let a caller start us off on this one because we haven't been going to callers. So we go now to Robert in Missouri listening on KHJR. Robert, do you see any signs of renewal or hope in the church?
This is referring to the 60s and 70s in terms of renewal. I was just wondering what the Catholic Church, I'm a Catholic, what the Catholic Church negative and positive opinions of the two renewal groups, one led by Cesar Chavez, the migrant workers, and also the other one would be Dorothy Day, the Catholic workers at Casa Juan Diego, immigrants. Could you please respond to that, please?
Is the caller from Houston? Are you from Houston?
Uh-huh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you are. Okay, because you recognize because Casa Juan Diego is in Houston.
Yeah, I would say the Zwicks are the – I'm not trying to remember their name. And one of them may be deceased, and the caller can correct me. Really wonderful people. And I would say Casa Juan Diego is one of the – and Cy actually can speak to this with much more authority than I can because he worked with the Catholic worker. But that one in Houston, the Casa Juan Diego, and then there's one up in Rochester, New York that was also quite good too – really, I think, very hewed very closely to Dorothy Day's beautiful, beautiful vision for the corporal works of mercy.
I'll try and answer in this way. With this, as far as Cesar Chavez goes and the United Farm Workers, it has been for a long time the view of the Catholic Church that unionizing is in general positive. It's certainly the church doesn't see unlimited goods. Within certain limits, unionizing is a very positive good. One of the problems with the modern union movement is it often got into advocating for things that really had nothing to do with unions. For example, you'll find that major unions advocating for things like easily available abortion, which they never should have gotten involved with and the church is never going to support. A mixed bag there, I would say. Not without a great deal of specific knowledge about what the United Farm Workers are doing today at this moment.
I would point the caller to an excellent piece that's on the Crisis Magazine website by a professor at Christendom named Chris Shannon.
Okay.
Is Cesar Chavez, is he servant of God? Is he?
I don't know the status of Cesar Chavez. Anybody out there know?
No,
we don't know. Yeah. But I will say about Dorothy Day, I am more familiar. And Dorothy Day is a in many ways a very saintly person, former communist, anarchist, not really communist, more of an anarchist than a communist, and a completely secular person for a time in her life who fell in love with Jesus, fell in love with the Catholic Church, had a daughter out of wedlock who she had baptized, had gone through an abortion earlier, but a conversion to the Catholic faith, but not just a conversion to the Catholic faith, but a conversion in particular to the service of the poor. And I think it'd be very hard to argue against the saintliness of Dorothy Day, certainly in her later years. However, the Catholic worker movement was marked by her anarchism to some degree. And so it is a very disorganized collection of houses around the country and around the world, some of which are very, very faithful Catholic undertakings, some of which are in the Catholic tradition with the quotes around that, as many universities now will say, some of which have completely how would I say this in a politic way, gone off the rails. They're hippie houses. And Dorothy was very patient with that in her own life, didn't ever try to exert control over all the houses or that kind of thing. You can quibble with her one way or the other or not about that. But today, the Catholic worker is a mixed bag. All over the world, you will find magnificent, faithful Catholic worker houses, and you'll find wild hippie houses, and you'll find free love farms, and you'll find the whole thing it's a mixed bag. Did you want to say you
look Dorothy like Day loved the Latin Mass?
I did not know that, but I know that Dorothy Day was certainly a daily communicant. She didn't allow Mass to be celebrated at Catholic worker houses because she said, get up and go to the parish. That's where you should be going to Mass, is in the parish. She didn't want to create a separate Catholic church or anything like that. I love Dorothy Day. I love Dorothy Day, and I'm grateful to God for her. I don't advocate for the Catholic worker movement in general, because there is no such thing as the Catholic worker movement right. In general. There's specific applications of it in various places around the world. Our caller has dropped, okay. So I will say thank you to – or are you still there with us, caller?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody took you off my screen.
No, I'm still here.
Was that at all helpful or interesting? Or?
Oh, yes. I subscribe to the Catholic Worker newspaper. And it's,
out of New York?
It's really something.
The one out
Catholic
of New York?
Catholic Worker.
There are several Catholic Worker newspapers, although many are probably defunct now, but generally people mean the one out of New York when they say that. I don't think you'll go wrong in serving the poor the way Dorothy Day served the poor if you have the heart for it. I just don't think you can go wrong. I'm pretty sure that Dorothy Day was mentioned somewhere in the Sermon on the Mount. Was she by name or no? Am I remembering that wrong? Anyways, thanks for the call.
You know, one of her inspirations was Rose Hawthorne, Nathaniel Hawthorne's daughter.
Yeah. You have told me that before, and I think that's the Hawthorne sisters, the Hawthorne Dominicans, right. Magnificent. This lay movements, which we forget are a very new thing. I think that's one of the signs of renewal in life in the church. Catholic Worker is one of those. There are many others. Let's talk about some of those when we come back on the other side as we talk about green shoots and signs of hope in the Catholic Church moving forward right here on Catholic Answers Live.
We're ready and waiting for your call today on Catholic Answers Live.
Is the church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Can we really say the Bible is inerrant when it seems to contain so many internal contradictions about allegedly factual events? What are the two basic interpretation problems we encounter when we read the Bible? How can we deal with difficulties arising from translation differences, copyist errors, and varying literary genres? 20 Answers Bible Difficulties gives you the tools to recognize and reconcile common kinds of Bible difficulties and addresses the specific ones that most often embolden skeptics and dismay believers. 20 Answers Bible Difficulties is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting series from Catholic Answers Press.
Hi, this is Dr. David Anders. Do you have questions about the Catholic faith? Listen for the best of Called to Communion on Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern and live on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Called to Communion on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Friday afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us. We assembled a panel to talk about signs of life and hope in the church here. We did cover the scandals, the current scandals, a little bit at the beginning, because I think that gives us a context. It makes it harder, I think, to look up and go, what's the project God is doing? But I sometimes think of that Flannery O'Connor story, and I'm sorry that I won't remember the name of it, where at the end the protagonist is looking up and God is doing great things in the sky and nobody else is looking. Everyone else is looking down with their worries and their cares. One of those very stark images. That's what Flannery O'Connor was all about, stark juxtapositions.
And, Cy, we need to know where to look.
Okay, so where do we look then, Chris? Fair enough. Where do we look for – I think that's a good point. Where do we look for the signs of hope in the church right now?
Well, it's not on Fox News.
It's not.
Or CNN or CNBC or any of they're in places where, to go back to our first hour, where human beings are present to one another, where people are married and having children. For me, the signs of renewal are hope. The green shoots that you describe are places where there is liturgical reverence, because without liturgy, everything else we won't get right. We have to get liturgy right first. That is our interaction between us, the created, and God. Right. So we have to get that right. So the renewed enthusiasm for the traditional rite, the growing number of young families who love the Latin Mass. But more than just that, because people will say, well, that's nostalgia. But then you go to these places and they're to these Latin Mass parishes, and they're full of families, none of whom were alive, before the liturgical reforms. But also just a love of beauty. Wherever we find a love of beauty, and of course that is that is in the liturgy of the Mass, but music, where music is beautiful as part of the liturgy, and then associated with that, I see some. So in terms of liturgy, I think of the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles in Gower, Missouri, Clear Creek in Iowa. Those are two locations. But then I think to go to what we were talking about at the beginning of the hour, how I approach something as the father of sons. My kids are grown in the main. But if I had a boy that I'd be sending to high school right now, where would I look? And there are two places. One would be St. Gregory's in Scranton, Pennsylvania, back or outside of Scranton in their original home. And then what is a child of St. Gregory's, St. Martin's Academy. And I know that Dan Kerr has been on the show here, St. Martin's Academy in Fort Scott, Kansas. And this is a place where young men are being formed. And we talked about, you know, what's at the problem of the scandal, right? Priestly formation. Well, that begins with good formation in high school. So they're not on screens all the time. They're reading poetry. They're playing musical instruments at Dan's school, St. Martin's Academy. It's animal husbandry. They're taking care of farm animals. They're growing their own food. So these are the kinds of signs of hope that really fire my heart.
Todd? Do you see nothing? Nope, I got nothing.
Liturgy is part of it. So yeah. The previous caller mentioned the 60s and 70s, and I think that was kind of the context from which we were emerging when you're talking about the green shoots. That's the soil, right? And I think we've seen a tremendous upswing in liturgical renewal as well as architectural renewal.
The
spaces in which we do liturgy too there's a greatly renewed attention to beauty, to form, to art that is truly conducive to prayer and not experimental and not gaudy, and I think Chris mentioned having persons being present to one another, the great renewal in pro-life, pro-family ministries is a component of this that can't be left out. So I think I'm inclined to agree with Chris that liturgy is probably at the heart of it,
yeah.
But then we go out from there and we form our ecclesia domesticas, right? We work on marriage. The rise of National Family Planning Apostolates,
right?
One specific. Right. So we were talking about Humani Vitae and the sexual misery that emerged from the sexual revolution, and you know, perhaps even if indirectly to some degree, the work of NFP and pro family apostolates in the church has been a corrective there.
You know, Si, I would like to say, and I hope this doesn't sound like a commercial, that Catholic Answers is one of these green shoots and maybe even something of a tree by this point. Carl Keating, in an act of extraordinary faith, stepped out of the boat, gave up his law practice, and started writing these tracts to defend the teaching of the Catholic faith. And here we are now, 35, 40 years later. No one seems to know the exact date. What is that? So almost 40 years later, right, we are an organization of 45 employees, staff, that are reaching people all over the world through every kind of media that we were talking about. And then Catholic Answers has been the beneficiary of another green shoot, and that's St. Michael's Abbey up here in Orange County. And I was negligent in naming places to send your boys for school. The Abbey up there has a magnificent school, St. Michael's up there in Silverado, where also young men can get good formation. So there are such places.
I think you left out, too, a wonderful little Catholic school right near the—
St. Joseph's?
Right near the Sexbot Factory in San Marcos, coincidentally enough. Where my own children attend, and it's
San Marcos, the city of extremes.
Really, you got both sides of the spectrum there.
I want to get to callers because they want to ask us about green shoots and talk about that a little bit. But I do want to defend and I'm not defending it against you, Chris. I'm just saying that there are also signs of renewal and life in the ordinary form of the liturgy. For example, we don't come here every morning and celebrate the Mass in Latin.
No, Father Hugh says the ordinary form quite beautifully here.
And it's really beautiful and powerful. Yep. And there are increasingly parishes where you go to Mass, because I end up in a lot of different parishes for various reasons, and where you feel the Mass is really being prayed here. This is that the people are intent upon praying. And I feel like that's a tremendous sign.
No question.
Of renewal. Let's take a call. Michael in Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are up. Your question or comment about the signs of new life and green shoots in the Catholic Church.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just came into the Catholic Church.
Welcome.
In February. Thank you. But you can see how
sure.
I'm a little bit
timing.
Upset.
Nice timing.
The things that I found out. Yeah, exactly. And so my issue is, you know, when this first thing came out with the one cardinal who was 80 years old, I kind of got by it, you know, through some encouragement from other people and things like that. And but a few days later, after this Pennsylvania thing happened, it just really made me sick. And hearing the bishops talking about that they're going to, you know, I guess form a council amongst themselves. Like, I'm at the point now, I just don't trust these men. I don't trust them. It's very hard for me when I go to service now. You know, I'm sitting there looking, is my priest gay? Is he homosexual? You know, everywhere I go, you know. And so it makes it hard. I'm not going to leave the church. I got past that because I have a few friends that kind of say, where are you going to go? This is the truth. And I agree with it. But I guess my question or what I want to know is that if the bishops try to continue to cover these things up, what can the laity do? I heard from one website, Church Militant, that, you know, make sure that we don't give to the bishops until they, you know, make things right. So I guess I'm concerned because, I still have an issue. I have kids. And if one of my daughters or my son, if this was to happen to them, I don't know what I would do. It infuriates me.
That seems perfectly reasonable. This is an infuriating situation we find ourselves in, especially because you get that sense. So sometimes you get this as a parent with your kids. We've been over this before. I mean, how are we back here again that you're involved in this particular behavior? And that you do get that feeling that I think many, many Catholics feel that. Some, I just want to stress to you that I spend my life around lots of very solid Catholics, and I have seen people more angry now than I've seen them about past things. It seems like people are just at the point of being fed up.
Right. So one thing that I would underscore that may give some hope to the caller, I hope that it does, is a point that Tim made on the show a couple of days ago and others have made, and that is the news that's coming out of Pennsylvania, in a sense, is news because we're learning about it now. But these are events that transpired over a 60-year period quite some time ago, and many of these people are dead. And that if we were to look at the record of the church, right, since Dallas, and even before, there does seem to be an effort. Now, what is of concern is that there are members of the episcopacy who are identified even in that Dallas document, who are still working, right? And so that's some concern, and we're going to see what the Holy See does about that. On the question of withholding money, what I would discourage Catholic Answers listeners from doing is withholding money from their parish.
Yes.
In fact, Todd and I were talking about this earlier off the air. Maybe he could even develop it better. Ed Peters, in the Light of the Law, has a good piece on this. But if you need confession, you need the sacraments, you need somebody who's going to bury you or marry you or whatever, you need a parish. And if you're withholding from your parish, the people that are going to suffer are the people working for the parish. So that guy who's feeding his family by, you know, tending the grounds or whatever it is, or the catechist and that sort of thing. It's not going to hit the diocese. And Ed Peters' comment, and I think it bears a lot of consideration, is that the diocese the bishop is good. You know, he's still, as I said, he's still going to be driving the same car. Right?
Yeah, you're not going to get to the bishop.
So Now, I would encourage people to write, to speak to their pastors, to express their concern and get the attention of their pastors, to find out what they have in mind, to not accept, as we were talking about earlier, merely a therapeutic answer, to demand an acknowledgement that this is in fact the action of evil, right? And then if you're inclined, ask to visit your ordinary, ask to visit your bishop, say, I would like to sit down with you and hear from you your plan to make sure that the men who serve as priests in the diocese currently and going forward are not going to suffer from this affliction.
I imagine many bishops will be making themselves available publicly. They're going to go to parishes. They're going to go to those things. Go, and if your bishop is coming and wants to talk, go enter into a dialogue with your bishop. Have a conversation with him. Todd, a man enters the church in February of 2018, and by the middle of 2018, we're a big basket case again. What do you say to him?
I would assure you that this is as big a punch in the gut for us cradle Catholics,
or
longtime converts, as it is for the new Catholic, particularly those of us who have been watching and remember the pain when we went through this in 2002. But I think Chris's point is very good, that it has this not again flavor to it, but it really is, to no small extent anyway, a rehash of older news that's just kind of been repackaged, and it actually raises a quandary for us as we defend the church in ways that we should through this, that we want to cooperate with the world, we want to cooperate with the secular authorities to bring these men to justice, and
yes,
we don't want to hide, we don't want to deny, we don't want to downplay the gravity of these crimes, but it would be easier for us to do that if the world, in the form of a district attorney or a grand jury, whatever it may be, it'd be easier to do that if they were completely honest in the way these things were packaged and presented in the media. And I would urge anytime a story like this comes through to sift through it, sift through the details, try to pick out the language that's used to make sure that there is not there's not intentionally pointed language, even propaganda being used. So in this case, if you saw the press conference with the district attorney in Pennsylvania, there was stress placed on the number 300 priests.
Yeah,
they were 300 priests, and they used words to describe what they claimed they were all being accused of. Now, some of them were, but in many other cases, it was other forms of sexual impropriety that are not good. But there's a spectrum of not as bad to worse. But there was a conflation of them all in the way it was described. Similarly, the time frame of it, there was a sense given that these things are all very recent. They're all very present. As Chris pointed out, a lot of them are dead. One of them I read today was born in 1892 or something like that, the priest that was accused. So I would just recommend a somewhat jaundiced eye when these reports come out. Not that they're going to make the problem go away or whitewash it, but understand that it probably quite isn't as bad as is being reported in every case.
It's really encouraging to hear, Michael, you, a new Catholic, say to us, I'm not leaving the church, because it's something we all – I mean, you just have to make that decision. This is the Church of Jesus Christ, and no matter who has thrown mud on its face, we're not leaving it. Thank you for that inspiring call, Michael.
It's the only place, Si, that we can get our sins forgiven.
Okay, Michael?
Yes. Yeah, I just made that decision, my mind up, yesterday. So, you know, I'm going to try to stick with it. But it's hard for me hearing about a mortal sin, a venial sin, and the people that are telling us and forgiving us of our sins. They're doing it, and they're allowing other people to continue to do much worse.
For the most part, however, that is not true. That's, I think, something for the vast majority of priests, that is not true. They're not excusing mortal sin. They're absolving people,
right?
But
which is
not
better.
But they're not making excuses. They're not. They're good men, and some of them saintly men who are. You know, they put on that collar, walk out, and go to the grocery store or whatever they do, and they face ridicule because they stand for the church, and they're heroes for it. And they've been betrayed by their brothers just as much as we've been betrayed by our fathers in those cases where that happened. Michael, thanks very, very much for that call. We do have to take a break. Don't forget that right now we have a back-to-school sale going on. All kinds of fantastic books, including Why We're Catholic, Answering Atheism, Just Whatever, a book that that your student will really appreciate. Before you send them off to college, get them some of these books and make sure they've got them in their hands. Go to shop.catholic.com, put in the promo code MSchool and get those back-to-school deals.
This is Pat Buchanan. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
And we need to pray for all our world leaders and all those who are in such danger. See, in a day and age where people are getting further away from God, you get further away from goodness. Only God is good. You remember what our Lord said one day? Why do you call me good? He said, only God is good. Only God.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Oh, it's so nice to be with you on a Friday here at Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being with us. And for those who have called, I realize once you start talking about the scandals in the church, people want to talk about that. And the purpose of this hour is to talk about shoots and green shoots of hope in the church, of which there are many.
We'll just stay on for a third hour.
I'd be happy to do it, but I don't know how EW10 would feel about it. But so if you're on the line and you have questions or comments about the scandal, I'm not bypassing you. I'm going to try to get back to you before the top of the hour, but I invite these gentlemen here to offer some hope for the future. And you said something interesting at the break. Actually, Chris, I'm going to start with Todd on this one because I haven't started with Todd for a while. Some signs of hope, some green shoots.
Well, Chris mentioned millennials, and he had a really good point to make about them. There's data that we're coming across now about millennial attitudes towards marriage and divorce. Now, we know that all throughout the West, people are marrying less. They're marrying later.
Yeah.
So there are dark signs about millennial attitudes towards marriage. But they have, on the other hand, really encouraging attitudes towards divorce, towards its undesirability. That's probably connected with a lot of them being children of divorce themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of sense in which the divorce experiment that played out with the advent of no fault divorce after the sexual revolution, and the wreckage that it left in its wake,
mm-hmm.
there's a wisening up going on in the younger generations, so there's a sobriety in attitude towards marriage that, look, we're going to make this work. It's not a temporary thing. So I see signs of encouragement in that.
Chris?
I like to make fun of millennials, especially because we have so many working here at Catholic Edge. They're lazy. They don't come to work on time. Actually, that's not the case.
That is not the case. I'm so impressed with these millennials here. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, and they tend to dress well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ours anyway. But, I'm the father, I guess, of three of my four, I guess, are millennials. There's something about them that does interest me and that I admire. They don't seem to be that interested in stuff. You know, when I was, what's a millennial, like 24 or whatever.
Okay, let's say that.
So, I mean, of course, I was in the Marine Corps at the time, but I certainly was thinking about acquiring things, an automobile, a car. An automobile and a car.
Good for you.
A house. A color television. I don't know. Things for the kitchen. Who knows? But the millennials I know really live very simply.
Yeah.
I think they are very attracted to living simply, and I think that is a real sign of hope. To be able to detach from stuff, because America is the country of stuff,
the capital of stuff.
We are.
I mean, yeah. It could be that they've seen, just as I suggested before, they've seen the downside of a cheap marriage culture, that they're seeing the downsides of consumerism too. Let's hope.
Yeah, right. Okay, so right, they've seen all the counterfeit and the, you know, advertising to children is tremendously damaging, I think, but at a certain point they become a bit inured to advertising because of it. They also become inured to they become insensitive to good news as well. They just don't believe anybody about anything. But maybe they've been so assaulted with the consumerist culture so long. Maybe they've toughened up about it and they're not so vulnerable to it. That would be a very, very positive thing. I would like to mention a positive sign, and that is, I don't think we're going the wrong way with vocations. I don't know how it's going for women religious as a general rule, although you see these communities of wonderful women religious either
Nashville,
forming,
Dominicans.
Or they're either forming new communities or there are young women coming in and revitalizing some of the communities for women. But a lot of the seminarians we meet, and maybe this is a self-selecting sample because that's why they came by here to Catholic Answers. I don't know. I think, man, these are impressive young men. There's a lot of them. You know, you hear about these. We just had Father on yesterday from the seminary in Cincinnati, and they're full. They're to the gills full. They're so full, they're going to build new buildings there. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, I spoke at the, I think it was last October, I gave a talk on technology to the college seminary at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, the St. John Vianney Seminary, which I think is the largest of the college seminaries in the country. I'm 100% sure about that. And these were just, it was about 400 kids, young men, vibrant, articulate, well-groomed, but without looking weird.
Just normal men.
Yeah, exactly. Normal. Right. Normal.
Years ago, I wrote an article for Crisis Magazine back when it was still a print magazine, back in Chris's era.
And, praise God for print. Catholic Answers Magazine is still in print.
It'd be the last ones. And the title that they gave it was The New Catholic Manliness. And it was kind of an overview of signs of hope, a return of Catholic masculinity. And this played out in a number of different facets, so in catechesis, in spirituality. And one of those was in the seminaries. And I got to interview a number of seminary rectors and other teachers in seminaries from St. Mary's, from elsewhere. And they talked about a real sea change. Now, this is in the late 90s, early 2000s or so, They talked about a real sea change in directors of vocations, seminary rectors, all those who make the call on prospective seminarians, for the first time maybe in a generation, intentionally seeking out those who have an authentic masculinity, those who take care of their bodies, those who bear themselves a certain way, and even beyond those, you might argue, superficial aspects of masculinity, but those who are masculine to the core, and prioritizing that. And I think that that is an area where
we've got
that we're bearing fruit stronger now with the priests that we're seeing today.
Yes.
I would just like to add one positive note. I thought Chris Check was very well behaved for these 2 hours.
Yes, indeed.
Did you think so?
B minus.
Chris Check is our president. Thanks so much for joining us for these 2 hours, Chris.
My pleasure. Sorry, anytime.
And Todd Agliolaro is the director of the Catholic Answers Press. Todd, thank you very much for joining us for these 2 hours.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope you'll do it again, Todd. It's
love
really
to.
Fun to have
hey,
you si, here.
Hey, get
studio.
Todd on the show.
Todd's really smart. Yes. It's not at all like you said, Chris. No.
Keep talking like this. I'll come anytime you want.
Jesus Christ is the light of the nations, and we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.